everyone. This is Mark Movsesyan. I'm the co-director of the Center for Law and Religion at St. John's. And I'm joined once again by my friend and colleague, the other co-director of the center, Mark DiGirolami, for another episode of Legal Spirits, which is our podcast series on cases and issues in law and religion. You can find past episodes on our website, lawandreligionforum.org, and you can also find us on Apple iTunes and also in the Google store. Well, Mark, welcome back. This is our first podcast for quite a while, since last year.
Yeah, happy new year to you, Mark.
Yeah, happy new year to you. It's been a while, but sure, happy new year. Why not? How are things going up in Westchester?
They're fine. They're fine. You know, courses have started. Spring's just around the corner. So looking forward to a happy and healthy new year.
Yes, let's hope so. God willing. Okay. So, gang, today we're going to be talking about one of the big religion stories of the very new year, and that is the Biden inauguration and the role of the religious left. We're going to talk today about President Biden's inauguration in Washington last month, which was marked by a number of religious messages and was characterized by religious imagery in speeches. And we're going to talk about what that says about civic religion in American life, and also what it says about the rise of the so-called religious left, which is turning out to be a possible foil to something that's a bit more familiar to people who study law and religion in America, namely the religious right. So, Mark, why don't you start us off by telling us a little bit about, and I should say one last thing, is we'll also try to talk about what all of this presages for the role of religion in the Biden administration, although he's only been in office for less than a month, so it's probably a little early to know exactly what role religion will have. But, Mark, let me turn it over to you, and why don't you start us off by describing the Biden inauguration and also the religious imagery in the inauguration.
Sure. And, you know, it is, I think, clear, obviously, as you say, the administration is brand new and we're not really sure what will happen yet with it with respect to some of the issues that we talk about. But one thing does seem clear, and that's that President Biden relied heavily on religion and Catholicism in particular to frame the occasion of his inauguration. This was noticed even by and emphasized by many publications in the days and weeks that followed it, the New York Times, the New Yorker. In fact, there have been stories in the major news outlets about religion and politics and the role that religion will have in this new administration.
Yeah, and Mark, as far as I can tell, we're going to talk about this a little later, but I don't recall seeing any sort of, you know, negative stories about this, that this was somehow inappropriate or he shouldn't have been doing this. Did you? I didn't see any of those.
Well, we'll talk about that. Yeah, no, I haven't seen that either. It's certainly in these outlets that I've been talking about, the Times, the New Yorker, and so on. It has been portrayed positively, and that's something to remark on also. This was noticed, as I say, this religious imagery and the sort of more general religious framing of the inauguration. It might be unexpected, as we'll talk about in light of studies that seem to say, and Mark, you've talked about this in some of your own work, that the Democrats are the party of secularism as well as of sort of non-traditional religion. We'll talk about the nuns a little bit. But I think it's fair to say that President Biden chose to present a comparatively traditional religious message in support of his administration at the inaugural. So the inauguration, January 20th, this is now about a couple of weeks ago, maybe a little bit longer. What did the president do and what did he include as part of the program, part of the pageantry and the festivities? Well, he and the vice president began by attending mass at St. Matthew's in Washington, D.C., Yeah.
Now, I should say, Mark, so President Biden is a Roman Catholic. I don't think that Vice President Harris is, just to clear that up.
I don't think she is right. Either, but she did attend Mass on this occasion. I don't know why she attended Mass, probably to support the president and because that was part of the occasion and so on.
To be respectful,
exactly. So he then proceeded on to the inauguration itself, in which a Jesuit priest and former of the Georgetown faculty delivered an invocation for the president and emphasized, as did the entire inauguration, issues of unity and healing. The president said in his address that his, quote, whole soul, close quote, is invested in the project of bringing America together, uniting our nation. He said that, quote, history, faith, and reason, close quote, will show the way of unity. So faith and reason, these are the sort of twin pillars of Catholicism, as not just Catholicism, but certainly those are sort of the ideas of natural law, that faith and reason go together.
And then he made another reference, Mark, to St. Augustine. I'm sure this warmed your soul.
Yes, my soul was warmed. He spoke about Augustine's Confessions, actually, in claiming that, quote, a people are a multitude defined by a common object of their love, close quote. So that's a line right out of the Confessions. And you know, question, what are our common loves? These loves are actually a little bit different than what Augustine claimed were our common loves in Confessions. But according to the president, quote, opportunity, security, liberty, dignity, respect, honor, and yes, the truth, close quote. So that was the Augustine moment. So he then urged Americans to unite and spoke of our, quote, better angels, close quote. That's a reference to Lincoln's first inaugural address. He insisted that fellow citizens will be, quote, sustained by faith, driven by conviction, devoted to one another and the country we love with all our hearts, close quote. And then he even referenced this song that is part of American Catholic liturgy, On Eagle's Wings, composed in 1977, and very much in the spirit of post-Vatican II liturgy as sort of manifested in the United States, a song that we can't seem to drop no matter what.
I had the sense just the way you said the song that it wasn't your favorite.
Yeah, this is part of the liturgy as it has come to us in the post-Vatican II moment. Some people like it and some people don't love it. But anyways, On Eagle's Wings is very well known. And he concluded finally with a reference to Psalms, quote, weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning, close quote.
Right. Okay. And that was just President Biden's own speech. But of course, there was a lot of other religious imagery in the inauguration, quite apart from his speech, right, Mark?
Yes, that's right. After the address, there was the junior poet laureate who addressed the crowd with a poem and referenced a passage from Micah. And then later in the day, there was a photo of Pope Francis in the background with some family photos of the president and his family that was observed by journalists. There was a message of greeting released by Pope Francis and well wishes for the presidency. So it was really a day kind of saturated with religious imagery, religious messaging, all scripted, I think, and in support of advancing Biden's rhetorical framing of unity and healing for his administration.
Right. So the way you've described it, Mark, there was a whole lot of imagery, a whole lot of religious imagery at the inauguration last month. Now, of course, that's not unique. You know, religion has always played a role in American presidential inaugurations and more generally in American life.
That's true. And, you know, even though some claim to resist or object to it, in fact, I think civil religion is a kind of pervasive feature of political life. It goes back long before the American experience. It certainly has been made use of in the American experience as a much older phenomenon than that.
Yeah, so tell us about that, Mark. Tell us about the older phenomenon of civil religion.
Well, defenses of civil religion are as old as, at least as old as Western political thought. One can find them in Plato, in Republic, for example. You have defenses of the importance of establishing the gods of the city and so on. You can see them in Aristotle, in Cicero, Polybius, all the great thinkers have something to say, and usually something positive to say about civil religion. And by civil religion, I should emphasize what we mean is
how would you define that? How would you define civil religion?
Yeah, I would say using the use of religion, religious imagery, religious language, religious themes in support of, and also sort of for the mutual support of religion and politics within the context of the state. So the overt, the political use of religion and its, in turn, its strengthening through the use of politics. That's what civil religion is, I think.
Right.
Would you agree?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, that's actually a very nice way to put it. I might just be sort of more kind of sort of informal about it and say, well, it is civil religion is the kind of corpus of religious or spiritual images and concepts that that states have to ground themselves and bring out on public occasions to lend a certain solemnity to things.
Yeah.
That's, maybe that's how I would think about it.
I think that's a nice way to describe it too. I find it to be an, a very important part of what Leo Strauss and other political thinkers have called the regime, the idea of the regime. The regime is sustained and it also sustains the religion. So in whatever that religion is, it doesn't have to be religious in the sort of traditional way that we think about things. It could be really sort of extends beyond any kind of spiritual or transcendental grounding for politics and for government can be called civil religion.
Yeah, and I would say also in the American context, just now speaking historically and descriptively, not normatively, civil religion has been a kind of non-sectarian monotheism, has been our kind of civic religion. You know, in God we trust. There's no specific definition of which God we refer to, but in God we trust, which covers a general, Justice Scalia made this point in some of the Ten Commandments cases, a kind of general, and I speak now simply descriptively, not as a constitutional doctrinal matter, but our civil religion in America tends to be non-denominational, monotheistic. You know, sometimes we talk about Judeo-Christian. You know, more recent years, we sometimes talk about Abrahamic, but you know, I think the way I said it was better, non-denominational monotheism.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is fair to say that. I would say that probably the Christian strains and the mainline Protestant strains, albeit not of a specifically denominational sort, are the powerful strains. And that makes sense as just purely as a historical matter. I mean, Christianity, Protestant Christianity, but Christianity more broadly has been the religion of the United States, purely descriptively as a historical matter. Of course,
I agree with that. I agree with that. But the sort of the genius of the American civil religion is so Protestant Christians have been able to hear their God in that phrase, "In God we trust," but Catholics were then able to hear it, and Jews and Muslims and perhaps other religions too. You're right. It's a broad enough term that it sort of can bring everybody in. Either you think it's watered down, it's not really spiritual, but that is in some sense the unifying force, I think, of our civil religion so far in American life.
That's right. Well, and so one can see in President Biden's use of civil religion, I think these same kinds of themes. In some ways, it was and now actually, Mark, I want to ask you about this because you have some expertise here. What do we make of these uses of religion in Biden's address and in the day more generally?
Yeah, well, I'd like to make three observations about that, actually. And the first might come across as a little snarky, but I don't mean it that way. And the others, I hope, less so. And, you know, anyway, I hope that listeners find all of these useful. First thing, my first observation about the pervasiveness of religious imagery in President Biden's inauguration is, where are all the complaints? You know, I was asking you before, I mean, when I look at the media reports of this, I thought the reports were either positive or neutral. You know, either this was a great thing, you know, Biden was showing that the left is also religious, or then there were people who were sort of neutral about it. And the reason I asked the question, where are all the complaints, is, you know, Mark, as you know, I'm teaching federal courts for the first time this semester.
Congratulations.
Yep, this is, I'm taking a break from Fed Courts prep to record the podcast. One case we cover in the class is Hine versus Freedom from Religion Foundation. I'm sure you know the case, Mark, about it from a dozen years ago or so, in which an important secular group argued that President Bush, this is the second President Bush, violated the Establishment Clause by giving speeches that used religious imagery and that praised the efficacy of faith-based programs in delivering social services. Now, the Freedom from Religion Foundation lost on standing grounds. That's not why I'm bringing up the case. My point is that was not that unusual, that lawsuit, because secular groups often protest the use of religious imagery in public settings, including at inaugurations. In fact, such groups are responsible for much of the Supreme Court's Establishment Clause jurisprudence over the last 50 to 60 years, although I want to hasten to point out there's no Supreme Court case on inaugurations per se. Now, if using religious imagery was bad when President Bush did it, it should also be bad when President Biden does it. But not only have we not heard complaints about groups like the Freedom From Religion Foundation, in fact, I went on the website to look, but I didn't see anything about the Biden inauguration, though perhaps a suit will be pending, I don't know. They're just not interested in this, it seems. They're not interested in challenging President Biden's use of religious imagery. So I don't think we're going to be seeing a lot of lawsuits in the next 4 years. Mark?
Yeah, well, so I mean, I think what this might point to, and in fact, is something that I've always maintained, that civil religion is much more about the civil than about the religion. So, maybe the better way to say it is that the religion, it's the political part of religion, if one can separate these. in the United States, we always like to think that religion and politics are separate. They're completely separate domains. We have a kind of separationist, I wouldn't want to call it a hang up, but it is too far from that anyway. Otherwise, but whereas I think civil religion and what you're seeing here shows that just how united religion and politics can be. And, you know, people object when they object, not because of the religion part, because of the politics part.
Yeah, that's an old joke, right? Mixing religion and politics is bad when the other people do it, right? not so much when we do it. So look, one explanation for this, the lack of complaint, might just be simply politics. And that's true. And of course, I wanna hasten to say, politics is not limited to people on the left. People on the right are also certainly committed to political ends. And they're not, I'm not gonna say that religion is totally unmixed with politics on the right, or that would be wrong. But to say this it's just politics, I think, is too simplistic an explanation. I think what we're seeing in the early days of the Biden administration, as commentators like Elizabeth Diaz and Ross Douthat have suggested, is the new presence of the religious left. These are people who are committed to religion, people who are believers, and also committed to progressive politics and ideology. Now, this is a new thing. Americans and Europeans are used to thinking about the religious right. And these are traditionally religious believers, mostly but not entirely Christian, who are committed to conservative politics and ideology. And they've played a major role in American politics over the last few decades. But the religious left is different and it's new. Now, the religious left comes from all faith communities. There are progressive Protestant denominations like the Unitarian Universalists, of course, the Black Church, Reformed Jews. But, and Mark, I want to hear your thoughts on this. At least at the moment, it seems to have a heavily Catholic inflection, that is the religious left, especially under Pope Francis. Why do you think that is? I mean, I have my ideas, but A, do you agree with me? And B, why do you think that is?
So I agree in part. And the part that I'm not so sure about is that the religious left is a new phenomenon or a new thing. So I think there have always been, or at least in the 20th century, there have always been, at least within Catholicism, conservative and progressive strains. There have been strains that have wanted to interpret Vatican II and the moves that Vatican II made in a very, very progressive political direction, and there are those that interpret those sorts of moves in a more conservative way. So I'm not sure that, you know, if you consider, for example, the First Things Catholic and Catholics and the Commonweal Catholics, those divisions within Catholicism, they're certainly not brand new. It is true, I think, that President Biden probably is imbued in some ways in those disagreements and is himself a product of those kinds of disagreements. President Biden is a serious church-going Catholic. So I should hasten to add myself that I don't want to suggest that his attending Mass was just sort of window dressing or something. Just he really does go to Mass every Sunday. So he's a serious Catholic. He is a serious Catholic that that is serious as a progressive Catholic, just as one can have serious conservative Catholics.
Okay, well then, so maybe it's not so new. And of course, I'm a bit of an outsider to these debates within Catholicism. But why Catholicism? I mean, Catholicism is still a minority religion in the United States, and it seems to have an outsized role in the religious left. It sort of has an outsized role in the religious right. And one explanation might be it's because Catholicism has such a rich tradition of reflection on politics and the state, which is not the case with regard to evangelical Christianity or Orthodox Christianity, at least in this country. And by the way, this was often a criticism of the religious right. You know, Catholics supply the ideas, evangelicals supply the votes. There was just an article in the New Republic recently to this effect. So, I mean, maybe we're seeing the same sort of dynamic on the religious left. In other words, this is kind of a mirror image of conservative American politics. Just as business and national security conservatives have kind of tolerated the religious right, so far it seems maybe that secular progressives are willing to tolerate the religious left. Political coalitions often unite very different groups who bury their differences in order to achieve practical results. Now, is that alliance stable? You know, everybody knows that fissures are appearing in the conservative coalition. You know, business conservatives, for example, don't have very much in common with evangelicals. But I suspect that the alliance on the left between secular progressives and the religious left is also perhaps unstable. And why do I say that? And you know, it's difficult to get hard numbers, but it seems that percentage-wise, the religious left is a smaller element of the progressive coalition than the religious right is an element of the conservative coalition. You know, there was a recent Pew survey in the last few years. About 70% of Republicans and people who lean Republicans say they believe in the God of the Bible. By contrast, only 45% of Democrats and Democrat leaners say the same. In fact, Mark, you mentioned the nuns a little while ago. Nuns, and by this we mean people who say they have no religious identity in particular, when they list their religious identity as nuns, on surveys. Nuns now make up the largest, quote, religious group in the Democratic Party, about 30%, according to a different Pew study. So the Democratic Party really is, I think I say this only descriptively, is in terms of numbers, the party of secularism, just as the Republican Party is, just in terms of numbers descriptively, the party of the religiously committed. And so I wonder whether this new coalition won't have many of the same frictions that you see among conservatives. Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, so these are very interesting and persuasive observations, I think. I do wonder whether you're missing one important reason for the lack of stability that you quite rightly predict will happen, and that is just as on the substance. There are fundamental political theological disagreements that might obstruct a longstanding sort of coalition here. Whereas, you know, I think that there are some real substantive disagreements that Catholicism of any kind that is worth the name is going to have with some of the substantive platform of sort of secular Democrats, let's say.
Oh, sure. Just as there is on the other side too. Of course. I mean, Christianity is, you know, politically, my opinion is Christianity is really kind of it's unfair to describe Christianity as conservative or progressive. Really, it's kind of both, depending on what issues that you're talking about and what your perspective is. So, I guess the last point I'd want to make at the moment is that this is a point, Mark, I want to give you credit. You always tell me this whenever we talk about these questions, which is, you know, you need a religion to fight a religion, you know, and the idea that we will simply have a politics which is, you know, denuded of religion is phony. You know, we talk often about a divide in our politics between religion and secularism, but to my mind, the Biden inauguration shows that the divide may be better understood as a conflict between two rival religious conceptions. In fact, I might even go further and say that it's a divide between two rival understandings of Christianity, each of which emphasizes a different aspect of Christianity. That's kind of what you were getting at a second ago, Mark. Now, in America, given history and tradition, you know, Christianity is the religion that is most going to affect our politics, at least for now. Just other religions don't have the numbers to affect it in the same way. But you're seeing a real divide between, you know, people who emphasize the progressive, quote unquote, aspects of Christianity and people who emphasize the conservative, quote unquote, aspects of Christianity. Mark, what do you think about that?
Well, that's a fascinating point. And you know, it will be interesting to see whether whether and how the Biden embrace of Catholicism in this way, whether it continues, number one, and number two, whether it's capable of drawing in, you know, some of the folks on the secular left who perhaps have gotten interested in none kind of religion, or perhaps there will be a kind of revival of Catholicism of the left with respect to sort of cobbling together certain features of the Catholicism of the left with other features, other religious traditions, and so on. So that'll be something for us to watch for in the coming years, I think.
I think so too. And listeners, you can be sure that we'll be watching and sharing whatever we think about it with you in future episodes. So, but those are subjects for future episodes. So Mark, thanks very much. And thank you also, listeners. This has been another episode of Legal Spirits, which is our podcast series on cases and issues in law and religion. You can find past episodes archived on our website, lawandreligionforum.org. By the way, it's a newly designed website, so go take a look. It looks, I think, really nice. And you can also find past episodes on Apple and also Android. Okay, that's all for this episode. Thanks very much. See you next time.